Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
PK, hell of a job in that last appeal. Yes. Yeah. Hell, a lot of great saves. Austin, welcome back.
Yeah. Don't touch his man. Don't touch him.
Lindy Ruff in post game. Good morning, everybody. Jeremy and Joe. Sabres have a 2-1 series lead. They did not score first, but they did win the game.
It's kind of amazing. They have not scored first yet in the series, and yet they lead 2-1.
Yeah.
They have not scored yet in the series.
They have not scored,
on the power play. Their goalie gave up a goal from center ice, and yet they still lead the series 2-1. I mean, when you put it that way, I guess it's not going that bad.
Tonight, draft coverage here on WGR. The Sabres, or the Bills rather, have the third pick in the second round and also an early third round pick and the first pick of the fourth, which I think a lot of people would say you got to watch to the end of the third because they could move back up into the third. Draft coverage starts 7 p.m. tonight. So we'll get back to the draft in a minute. Paul Hamilton joining us here from Boston. His appearance brought to you by Railax Honda. Railax, we got this. Paul, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
Paul, Sabres fans are feeling better today, and I think it's more than just the win. That was a different hockey team from Game 3 to Game 2.
Yeah, they saw their team again. That was the team the Sabres have been since early December, for the most part. And it was right away. I mean, you could just see them get in on a forecheck, be physical, make the Bruins turn the puck over. It got to the point early that all the defensemen did for the Bruins, they had such little time because the Sabres were on them. They were just flipping the puck in the air. And Dahlin, I think, maybe picked off two at the blue line on turnovers. And the Sabre defense picked off more at the red line, making the Bruins turn it over. And then they would make a good outlet pass and be right back into the zone again. Now, it didn't turn into a goal, but it gave the Sabres confidence and put the Bruins back on their heels, something that we didn't see a lot of in Game 2.
All right. Yeah, Paul, even in the third period, I mentioned earlier that you knew they were playing well when the Bruins were trailing in the third, and it still felt like the Sabres were the attacking team. If you were watching on TV and there was no score bug, you might have thought that the Sabres were the team that was down because they were still controlling and getting chances.
Yeah, I never felt like they were in trouble, even killing penalties. I mean, that bugaboo showed up again, which, you know, they've gotten better at that for the most part, but they took two third-period penalties. And even killing the penalties, it really took any momentum the Bruins were trying to pick up from that away. They did get a couple of good scoring opportunities, which Alex Lyon was there for. But, you know, they did, I thought, a terrific job on those penalty kills to, you know, relieve the pressure, get it out, and not get themselves into trouble.
Timmins especially, right, Paul? Like, it's why he's in the lineup for those situations.
Yeah, and even the goal against, I don't blame him for going down to try to block that shot because he's so good at blocking shots. 9 out of 10 times, he will block it. That was the 10th time, unfortunately, and he totally screened Lyon, who never saw it. But, you know, things like that happen. That's the only goal they gave up, is that goal that Lyon didn't see. Lyon really helped the cause in two different ways. You know, Marco Sturm said you could just see the air go out of his bench when and Lyon, first I thought the shot went wide, but then I saw a replay later that it did go off Lyon's blocker. And, you know, it really lifted the Sabres and kind of downtrodden the Bruins a little bit that, you know, he wasn't able to score on that penalty shot. You know, he made a lot of great saves along the way, as did Swayman. But then the Sabres got in the act of screening goaltenders, and it was Tage Thompson, you know, who's been doing some other things other than scoring the two big goals in the first game. The Sabres were – the line had a great shift on the forecheck. They were just all over the Bruins. And then Tuck came out with the puck, and, you know, because of the forecheck, the Sabres had some room. They haven't had a lot of room around the front of the Boston net. And Thompson went to the net. It totally took Swayman's eyes away. He had no clue where that puck was or even who was shooting it. And Tuck converted on it.
Did you feel like all three of their top lines, Paul, kind of looked dangerous all night? Because really, I don't know if any of them did in game two. And I mean, especially with Oslin now centering that line with Doan and Benson, I felt like all three of their top lines, everyone wanted to see a better effort, look more dangerous. And it just felt like the Bruins, who are going to try to clog the neutral zone and not let you get speed. Like, I don't know. I felt like the Sabres were able to get speed kind of whenever they wanted to last night.
Yeah. Look at the Bo Byram goal, where Oslin comes through the neutral zone with speed. He gains the line, gets it in. I don't know.
Never got touched.
And I don't know how he saw Byram. He said he saw Byram the whole way. Well, then he's got eyes in the back of his head because his back was to Byram. And Byram himself said he was, I didn't think he saw me. He goes, I was rather surprised the puck came. But he shouldn't have been because that's what Oslin does. I mean, we've seen that a lot. And I'm wondering if Norris has been trying to play through an injury and finally he couldn't anymore because, quite honestly, if we go by what we've seen in the Boston game, we saw a huge upgrade on that line with Oslin from what Norris. Norris was, honestly, in the first two games, nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
So now that he's injured and out of the lineup, I'm just wondering if he was trying to fight through an injury because Oslin was better. Quite honestly, it was an upgrade on that line.
Paul Hamilton. Paul, we had Lindy giving the game puck to Rasmus Dahlin. You had said your move, Rasmus Dahlin. So, like, were you happy ultimately with what he bad penalty maybe at the end there, but were you ultimately happy with the captain response was?
I thought right off the bat when I'm watching the Sabres on the forecheck, it was Dahlin who was getting the turnovers, because the Bruins were just whipping the puck anywhere, and Dahlin was seeing it and getting there and then just getting the Sabres right back into the zone with a good outlet pass. Because some of the time he was getting the turnover at the red line, so the Sabres had to get out of the zone. And they just got out of the zone, circled up, and as they're circling up, the pass is right on the stick, and in they go again. I thought it was better. He still hasn't, really contributed to the offense as far as points go. You know who has? Who is taking a beating a lot of the time, and I think this season, unjustly, is Owen Power. He has 3 assists in 3 games, is helping that way too. I thought Owen Power was big on the penalty kill in this game and has been throughout the series. I, for the most part, have liked Owen Power's play. He hasn't been perfect, but for the most part, I think he's done well, and he is one of the guys that is adding to the offense along with Byram.
Yeah. Yeah, that pairing, right? Like, they're getting some tough matchups, Paul, but they're getting that little bit of offense. Byram, too, 2 goals in the series. And he played the most even strength minutes. I think it's each of the last 2 games for the Sabres on the blue line. I mean, he's one of these guys that has the playoff experience. I think Lindy touched on that yesterday. I feel like he's maybe been their most consistent defenseman through the 3 games. But Power, too, I think should be included on that list.
You know when Bo Byram hit my radar is when Colorado won the Stanley Cup and he was a rookie. And I'm watching the playoffs, and I go, who's this Bo Byram? Boy, look at him out there. And by the end, he actually was better than Makar in the playoffs, to be quite honest with you. I thought he was their best defenseman. I thought he was playing really, really well as a rookie, in the Stanley Cup and through the Stanley Cup finals. And it seems like maybe he's starting to lift his game in the playoffs here for the Sabres.
Paul Hamilton joining us on the Western Hotline. Paul, the Bruins are upset. Right.
On that, the front page of the Boston Globe sports page today is a picture of the Sabres celebrating the game winning goal, and the headline is "Elbow Room." Mm. They are upset that Tuck elbowed a Bruin before that goal.
I think they're also upset that the Sabres are crowding Swayman so much. He's taking a lot of bumps.
Sturm's mad about that.
Yeah,
right?
Like Swayman and Sturm are both mad about that. The Bruins are not happy with how the series appears to be going.
And how many times have you heard me say that? Good. Go get a piece of the goaltender.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As you go by, brush him. Get him upset. Obviously, it's working. you know, this is the NHL, and the Bruins aren't getting calls, and the Sabres aren't getting calls. It's what
you know.
Happens.
I mean, there were 11 power plays yesterday,
but it is puzzling.
There's still so many others that
that's
I'm watching.
True. No, I know, Paul.
Tage got tripped.
This interference,
yeah,
isn't being called or whatever, yeah. And it's for both teams. I don't think either team is getting the short end of the stick. I see calls against the Sabres that should have been called. I see calls against the Bruins that should have been called.
Yep.
It's just NHL officiating.
It might be a complaint every year, and since the Sabres haven't been in the playoffs for, you know, a long time, this is all kind of new to me again. But I feel like watching the penalties that have been called in the playoffs, the things they're missing versus the things they're calling, I don't know the rules. It's just it's very strange with this – you know,
right? Did you almost feel like the penalties the Sabres took, Paul, in the final 10 minutes? They were almost so obvious that you have to call them, right? Like, I guess that's the Thompson trip, and I feel like Dahlin was the same thing. Like, I don't know what he's doing trying to hit McAvoy away from the puck like that.
Because they're mad at McAvoy
because
McAvoy's been a little bit dirty in this series, and so they're mad at him. But again, that's the playoffs. McAvoy's gotten under their skin a little bit. It really, to me, hasn't. I suppose you can look at it. Well, it's not favoring either team. So what's the difference? Well, my point is, and it's always been, there's a rule book for a reason, and the players will get used to it. If the referees would just call the rule book, for a couple of games, the power plays would be a lot, but then the players would say, okay, I can't cross check a guy for six times in front of the net. Now you can cross-check them six times, and if you cross them a seventh, they'll call the seventh one. You know, it's just things like that both teams get away with, and, you know.
And really, I mean, even though there were 11 power plays yesterday, neither team scored.
Paul?
It was 0-for-11. I do feel like, though, didn't the Sabres power play, even though they didn't score, look better?
Yes, Paul. I want to say, like, I think that they're baby stepping their way. I won't predict a goal, but if they continued, they had better entries, they had better possession, they had better chances. Like, it looked like a regular power play that didn't score instead of one that lets the air out of a building.
And I'm not saying this sarcastically. They actually got set up into the zone.
Yeah.
Which is
they did.
Something they couldn't even do for a while. And so, you as a team, they can build on that. Say, okay, we like this, we like this, we like this. Rasmus Dahlin, if you shoot the puck there, you had half an empty net instead of trying to pass the puck. You know, things like that. You know, be more aware that you could have just ripped that puck and you would have popped it into an empty net instead of always looking to dish. Now they can refine it a little bit. You know, and go with it that way. Speaking of Owen Power, excellent on the penalty kill. Excellent, as they all are. I mean, those two kills in the third period, Lyon had to make a few saves. You know, there were a couple of one-timers, but he was right on them. But I thought just brilliant penalty killing by the Sabres there in the third period and throughout the series. And Owen Power is a big part of their penalty kill.
Mm-hmm. And they got, you know, they'll get their chances too, right? Especially when McLeod and Tucker out there. Malenstein had one.
They just missed a 2-on-0.
I know.
That was crazy. On a penalty count.
There's some big groans at our watch party, Paul. A 2-on-0 shorthand would have been nice.
Yeah.
They just missed it. Because Tuck was gone and McLeod was almost gone and he couldn't get it.
Yeah. I thought McLeod was good last night. Paul, zone entries. Dan Dunleavy at one point called him Hot Wheels McLeod at the third period because he was.
That's a good one.
It felt like he was skating the whole night. And again, that's part of it, right? Like the Bruins weren't able to really clog it up. And McLeod's one of the guys I feel like maybe you can always test that with. If he is skating at a million miles an hour, I think you're doing a pretty good job of getting into open ice.
And guys, everything you're bringing up here. Getting back to the original point, the Sabres were back.
Yeah,
that's what we've been watching since December 9th, for the most part, is what we saw last night. And it's all these, Lindy Ruff calls them one percenters that you're bringing up here. And Lindy Ruff said that in training camp. He told these guys, it's these one percenters that we have to get better at. And if you each keep improving on these one percenters, they're all going to add up for you. And all these one percenters were so much better last night.
Paul, were there Sabres fans in the building last night?
I didn't notice it until the Oslin goal. And then there was a pretty good cheer for that goal. I didn't see too many Sabre jerseys. I was looking around. There was one right in the front row in the corner, or two of them, rather, that were down there. But I didn't see too many Sabre jerseys at all. But, as I said, when Oslin scored that goal, there was a pretty good cheer that I could hear up in the press box. I don't know if I've said this to you already, and I'm just going to say it again. That, by far, and it's not even close, and I've covered hockey for more than a few years, is the best open net goal I have ever seen.
Hmm.
That was tenacity. That was hustle. That was, I am not going to be denied, even though everybody on the ice is 50 pounds heavier than me. I'm going to beat three guys. I'm going to go five hole on Pasternak, as Lindy Ruff.
That was funny.
Was hilarious when he goes, well, you know, our scouting reported when Pasternak's in net is go five hole.
Yep.
That was hilarious.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't believe what I saw on that goal. I don't remember an empty net goal that was so hard to score as that one was.
Well, in a playoff game, too, and you're on the road, and he's in his first playoff game, and there's three Bruins around, right? Like, the hockey IQ is getting brought up with him a lot. A lot of players probably, I think, would have just tried to shovel that right in the net off the wall.
Yes.
And he, like, had the patience to say, no, I'm going to stick my back out and turn before I shoot.
Yeah, and then go 5-0 on Pasternak.
Right, and also, like, the fact that he's even out there, right? Like, this is a point. We had someone tweet in that Oslin is Lindy's new Jochen Hesch, like, just trusting him in all situations. Like, Paul, it's 3 minutes to go in a one-goal playoff game, and he's the guy out there taking the faceoff.
Yeah, I got to get into my head. He's 22 now. He just turned 22. 22. I keep saying the 21-year-old, but he just turned 22. But still,
But Lindy trusts him nonetheless. Lindy trusts him in, like, all situations.
And Lindy Ruff has said that so many times this year. He goes, I trust him in any situations. I don't think I've ever seen Lindy Ruff drool over a rookie as much as he has Oslin this year in all the years I've been around Lindy Ruff. I mean, he is just.
Yeah.
He can't say enough about this kid.
Because historically, I don't know if this has been as true the last 2 years, but historically, wasn't Lindy one of the coaches that, like, you really had to earn it? Like, a rookie really had to earn it from him before they got in?
Yeah, like, well, look at the group that came up together, Vanek and Pominville and Gostad and Roy and Miller. They all sat in Rochester together. They weren't coming up. They all played a year or two in Rochester together, and then they all kind of came up together. And I think a lot of that is Lindy Ruff. It's like, I don't want you up here. Go learn a game down there. I think Vanek, I think it was a lockout year, but had 45 goals or something down in Rochester.
Yeah.
Look at Pominville. He got put on waivers and then went down and absolutely ripped up the American League. The points total were immense. And then he got called back up and then started ripping up the NHL, and that was it. But I remember Larry Carrière saying to me, he goes, we put him on waivers and nobody claimed him. We were so lucky.
Yeah.
He goes, that nobody claimed him.
Paul, one more thing. I'd said this after game two when they lost. I said I was kind of surprised at Lindy's tone, and he seemed to kind of soft play it. And he's seen a lot of series. He's not panicking over one loss. And I just want to give, like, full credit to him for that. Like, he knows the right notes to play with his team. The fact that he just kind of, yeah, you know, like, hey, now they had the experience of losing a playoff game. We weren't going to go undefeated. And that came across like a different kind of Lindy than, like, years past. But he's got a team that does not have a lot of playoff experience. And he kind of just said, like, no biggie. And then they got back to their game. And I just want to, like, just mention that Lindy played the right notes between games two and game three.
And I've kind of felt all along that by the time game five rolled into Buffalo, that it'd probably be 2-2. I really, in my head, was pretty confident the Sabres would get one of these games. It's so much better for you if you can get the first one, because now the pressure is on the Bruins. Had the Bruins won this one, then the Sabres would have huge pressure.
It would not be a good day today.
You got to win game four or you're done.
Yeah.
You can't come back to Buffalo down 3-1. And now that's on the Bruins. I mean, the Bruins, I think, pretty much have to look at it. It's a must win, because You go down 3-1, and you're on your way back to Buffalo, and two of the next three are in Buffalo. You know, you're in trouble. So, I mean, by winning the first one, even if they come home 2-2, it's going to put more pressure on the Bruins in game four.
Paul, what are you going to do with your extra day?
Well, today is just the players have totally off, and of course, the NHL has to make Lindy Ruff available to us. On a day like this, when you have 2 days in between games, you don't have to get a player. So we won't see any of the players, but we'll head over to the hotel and talk to Lindy Ruff today. So that'll be it, and then there'll be a full practice tomorrow.
All right.
Very and really, good. We'll just be looking for Norris, right? Because there's not going to be a goalie question between now and Sunday.
Yeah, Norris is here, by the way, if anybody was wondering. He's in Boston. But, you know, to me, I don't rush him back or whatever. If I'm the Sabres, and even when Norris comes back, I mean, Austin has already told Lindy Ruff, hey, and he did it in the regular season too. Hey, you're not taking me out of the lineup. When Norris comes back, you can figure out somebody else to take out of the lineup because it's not going to be me.
Thank you, Paul.
Take care, guys.
Paul Hamilton, his appearance brought to you by Railax Honda. Railax, we got this. No injuries to report from the game. Like, no one left the game. The Josh Norris.
Right, correct.
Right, we're gonna be keeping an eye on Josh Norris, see what the status is on him. He was listed as day-to-day, and he is on the trip, so, you know, he could come back and line up. Yeah, Oslin, of course, is staying in. There's no doubt about that.
So. And would be staying in on a top three line. You're not bumping him down to line four.
Right, right. The injury report, Sabres injury report, brought to you by Hamburg Overhead Door. Is your garage door injured? Call the experts at Hamburg Overhead Door to get your door healthy again. 803-0550. We'll get a quick call in here with Rob in Connecticut. Rob, good morning.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
It's the puck at center. Lyon in the blue paint for now. Arvidsson to the circle and his right. Lyon tracks him and makes the stop. He's got some room to skate. He'll take it in across the line. Oslin down to the corner, far side. Slides it in front, scores! Great pass to Byram, and he's tied the game at one apiece with 9:02 remaining in the second in Boston. Now Tuck comes over to help out. Byram into the slot. Krebs can't get the shot away. Tuck finds the puck, scores! Oh my goodness, Alex Tuck! Picks up the loose puck and he rips it home, and the Sabres have stormed back on the road to take a 2-1 lead. Extra skater on the ice, Arvidsson bumped off the puck at center. Here's a chance, lifted to the net, that'll go just wide. Racing Oslin after it, scores! Noah Oslin's first NHL playoff goal puts Buffalo up 3-1 with 1:24 to go in the third.
2-1 series lead for the Sabres after a win in Boston last night on the heels of changes to the lineup, some out of necessity due to injury, others just a byproduct of how the first two games played out here in Buffalo. Happy Friday with Marty. I'm Brian. How are you?
I like your sweatshirt, Duffer.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's seen this one before. It's called...
The netters are for winner. I got a sign right over here. You got the sweatshirt.
26 shirts, baby.
That's right.
Shirts.
And Noah Oslin comes in with the empty net. Look, there was a lot to digest after that game. I feel like in the style of the game that was played, in the physicality that, like, I was thinking, okay, how does that change from game two where there was a lot of clutching and grabbing and slowing down of the Sabres to after the whistle, rough stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And all of it to the goaltender change for the Buffalo Sabres to the power play. There was so much going into the game and so much to kind of see after the game. How did that all play in to the success of the Sabres in game three? So obviously Alex Lyon was at the top of my mind, but there's so much underlying that you know, we're going to be discussing here, and Shayna Goldman's going to be coming at the bottom of the hour to talk about the NHL, but also talk about that game last night.
Well, Blade Gang got a win. They made their way down from Buffalo to Boston, so that was a nice way to, you know, kind of kick off the evening. Looked like perfect weather for the journey, so... you know, we'll continue to follow their lead, Marty.
I mean, seriously, this is some commitment to not only go to Boston, but continue in with the support of the team in full gear and rollerblades and just take over the streets of Boston and just go right down the middle, double yellow line. I don't care. I'm taking over. So that was good support. And I must say, I saw a lot on social media. They were, I don't want to say attacked by Boston fans, but you put yourself in that environment, you're going to be taking it, right? And they were great. They were, you know, right there. They didn't back down, but it didn't cause any, you know, extracurricular activities. It's just part of the game, and that's what makes it fun.
Well, what was a huge part of the game was the penalty shot. And in Sabre playoff history, we've seen only two netminders have to stare down such instances. Dominik Hasek did so four times, stopping three of the four. Steve Shields had the unfortunate reality of staring down Eric Lindros and not succeeding. That was on one occasion. And now Alex Lyon has gone one for one after thwarting Victor Arvidsson last night.
Yeah, and the second period, you know, started like maybe game two, where you give up a goal and you're like, where is the second period going to go? And then all of a sudden, halfway in the second, you give up a penalty shot. Arvidsson had scored a couple of goals in game two, so he's getting an opportunity. Lyon played him really well by coming out and kind of, I know Alex Lyon says, you know, I'm not thinking too much, I'm just reading and reacting. But his first thought was, I need to take away the shot, because he was out far. And Arvidsson's got a good shot. He scored the goal on the breakaway 5-0 on UPL in game two. So Lyon came out really high, and it almost like he baited him to the blocker when Arvidsson pulled the shot to... pulled it in to shoot it. He baited him to the blocker and took it away, which was great, because a minute later... you score a goal. That's your 1-1 goal. And instead of a 2-0 deficit, it becomes 1-1. And the game changed in the middle of the second period in the way that the Sabres were playing. And it made Boston tired. And Boston didn't get much after that.
There was so much to love about Alex Lyon's game, which we'll continue to dissect, including his pre- and post-game comments to the media. And certainly this that appeared on TNT after the game.
I was talking to your former teammate, Matthew Tkachuk, today, and he was saying after some wins, he described you as a gamer, by the way, and after wins, you would come in the locker room and request the Lion King soundtrack. Is that still happening in Buffalo?
Yeah, it's actually queued up. When I get off here, I'm going to go into a nice Lion King montage. So, now, you know, the Lion King stuff has followed me everywhere, but I see it, like, it's a pretty common thing now for them to play the Lion King stuff on, and, you know, like, people hold their babies up.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like that's kind of, like, I have a little bit of, like, license to that. You know what I mean?
Well, so at least they're not yours. A little bit, but,
still no children, so trying to, extend that for a little bit longer. But yeah, we're just having fun. Obviously, Maddie's a great guy, so I'm glad that he had good things to say.
So Lyon has appeared in 6 postseason games now, 4 of them with decisions. He is 2-2, and those 2 victories, of course, both in Boston.
Be careful. If you come to a game and they do the Lion King raising of the baby, you're going to owe Alex Lyon some money. There's a license.
Or make sure it's your own child.
Yes, that too. We've seen the Beer Saber being held up a few times too in the same montage.
But from a save standpoint, beyond the penalty shot, like, what else did you see in Lyon's game last night? The decision to go to him. You know what I did yesterday, right? On this show. Stared into the camera.
Yeah.
Said there are no wrong decisions.
No.
It's absolutely what has allowed Buffalo to get to this point this year. Goalie rotation, trust, belief, preparation, yep. which I think is incredibly important here, and all three of them deserve credit for that, the way they've prepared themselves for this ongoing usage of three netminders, predominantly two, but yes, three this year. So what'd you see in Alex?
Well, I'll say this. I came on the show and said the same thing. Like, there's no wrong or right answer, but I do feel that Alex Lyon bring you a different type of game than Luukkonen, where it's more straight on. Mm-hmm. Like, you get guys coming straight on. It's making body saves. I was so impressed early on with the lateral saves that Lyon had to make. That one we just showed. Zacha, there was a geeky in the slot. I mean, being able to push, that's the geeky one in the slot, like being able to make that play, being able to push side to side here off the post and kick the right leg. Like, we don't, yes, Lyon can make those saves, but that's not been where his strength has been this season. It has been to just make himself look big, playing the position, the structured game, and the athleticism is secondary, where Lukanen's athleticism is primary, and then the structure comes in second. And I was really impressed with the athleticism that Lyon showed in the game to be able to make a couple of saves early. That changed the game. Like, if Zacha scores on that power play chance, or if Geeky scores on the power play chance, all of a sudden, you know, your power play struggling. Boston's power play would have scored. Boston power play, by the way, went 0 for 4 in the game with 8 shots, and there was lots of quality chances there.
League-wide power play trivia coming up, just so you know.
League-wide power play trivia. I better just refresh my my browser right now with power play page. But, that, I mean, the penalty shot. If you tell me, okay, in a shootout or a penalty shot situation, who do you feel more comfortable with? I probably would have gone with UPL because I like the athleticism and the fact that he...
Even after 6 of 7 in shootouts this year for Lyon?
Yeah, and it just maybe the, you know, the way that they play. Yeah. I think that... But Lyon did exactly what he had to do. So I thought that was... Again, no wrong decisions because it has been like that all year for Lindy Ruff and his group. But he had to play a big part early on, and I felt like he kind of played outside his comfort zone on a few of those saves that made a big difference in the game.
Well, for Lyon, he is 3 for 3 in his career now on penalty shots. This was the first one that he had faced in the postseason. And again, reiterating some almost hard-to-believe numbers across the NHL, this whole season has been really challenging for the shooters for some reason.
Yes.
But 0 for 4 are shooters on penalty shots in the playoffs, and 6 for 39 in total across regular season and playoffs this year. Just to give you an idea, if you were looking at it from a shootout standpoint this season, scorers are, you know, shooters are connecting more than 30%. So this is a significantly low number, and maybe it's just that. Maybe it's just a number. But Marty, I promised power play trivia.
Okay.
So the Sabres are 0 for 5 with an asterisk last night.
Well, yeah, an 8-second power play.
The last power play was 8 seconds long. But nonetheless, 0 for 5, they're 0 for 14 in the series. They're 0 for their last 36.
Yeah.
Can you name the other four teams that are goalless on the power play this playoff year?
In the playoffs, I'm going to say the Ottawa Senators.
That would be one.
That is one. Not the Montreal Canadiens, because that's the only way they score on the power play. How about the LA Kings?
Nope.
No, Colorado Avalanche.
Yes.
Okay. Colorado's had a bad power play all year. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, they're one of the best teams. So there's two more. I am going to go to Pittsburgh Penguins.
No.
Okay. That's not. What about Carolina?
1 for 10.
Ooh. Well, 10% is not that great.
Nope.
The Vegas Golden Knights.
No.
I don't
know. To end the misery. Yeah. Edmonton and Utah. So, Buffalo.
You know what? I was flipping a coin between Utah and Golden Knights because I'm like, I feel like that's not been a power play series, but I went with Vegas. I should have gone with Utah.
So, Buffalo, Colorado, Edmonton, Ottawa, Utah, without a power play goal. What do the five of them have in common other than that? They are all in the top 10 in goal scoring in the NHL this season. And Carolina, ranked number 2 in goal scoring, is, as mentioned, 1 for 10. So take it as you wish. It is still a very small sample size. And it kind of is what it is. But I stressed last night what happened was that they didn't lose the special teams game. Yeah. It's obvious we have to fixate on the power play right now because of the numbers that date back to the end of the regular season. But the reminder is this is a common occurrence across a very small sample of playoff games, and they've got to figure it out. The only thing I ask, if you're going to do one thing on your extra day off, before game four on Sunday, could you just rally the troops and have them watch Wyatt Johnston for an hour? He's the best power player in the league and has been for a while. And he's been great in the playoffs after being the best in the regular season. Please, just watch Wyatt.
So I feel like the power play last night actually gave you some good looks, moved the puck well. There was a personal change with Tuck being in the bumper, mm-hmm. and they tried to go to Tuck a couple of times. They even tried to go to Thompson for the big one-timer, which we've not seen a lot on the power play this year. He snapped his stick in half like Aleš Kotalík did 100 times in his career in Buffalo. But there was better possession, better looks, better puck moving, better entries on the power play, which was at least a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's still 0 for 36 in April and 0 for 14 in the playoffs, but you're up 2-1. And you didn't give up a power play goal to Boston, which was huge because Boston is also, you know, trying to win the special teams game and make a difference. I looked at numbers from last night, and I think that the biggest number to me that stood out is unmanned rushes and shot attempts from the slot off the rush. Mm-hmm. The reason is game one and two, Buffalo had two and two unmanned rushes in those two games. They had 10 last night.
Wow.
That is a big difference because they were able to break through the Boston neutral zone five men together, or the Lindy mentioned passing was better, breakouts were better. Well, yeah, and then you get speed. When you pass the puck and you get on the attack, you get speed, and maybe you can catch Boston not, you know, being in position. Unmanned rushes were huge. Rush shot attempts from the slot, 7-1 Boston last night. They had 5 in game one and 3 in game two. So game one was better. 5 shot attempts from the slot off the rush, but 7 last night.
Can we just do real quick the two goals of note outside of Austin's empty netter, but really just Bo Byram here? Like, honestly, like, yes. Bo needs a minute here on this show.
He needs more than a minute.
How do you describe him right now?
Confident. Opportunistic, like he knows when to jump without putting his team in a bad position. And that play by Austin was a great play. But look at, like, Bo Byram was there waiting, right? And funny because Austin after the game said, I saw Bo the whole time. And then when they talked to Bo after the game, and he was like, I wasn't sure if Austin was going to see me. I wasn't sure if he was going to get it to me because he had been waiting there. Mm-hmm. But his instinct to go there and wait were fantastic. And then game one is instinct to get in on the forecheck and create for Tage Thompson to get the goal, right? The first goal of the game that got the comeback. The instinct of Bo to jump in to get the second goal, the Alex Tuck goal. Mm-hmm. I feel like he is making great reads. Incredible. He's the Energizer Bunny out there. Like, his legs have never stopped moving. And that is giving the Sabres some offense in the game.
Still just 24 years of age. He's got 30 playoff games and a Stanley Cup under his belt. He acts like a 32-year-old, speaks that way. I think he's an incredible leader for this group at that very young age, and can't stress enough.
He's got a lot of experience. Lindy mentioned it. Like,
you know. Alex Tuck, obviously, we talked to him in the pregame last night. And how about the game-winning goal? Just, again, real quick on this. I mean, the body blow that he laid on Mason Lorai earlier in the sequence, this ended up being more than 30 seconds of in-zone time after a dump-in that Swayman didn't handle cleanly behind the net. Then Tuck pops Lorai with a reverse, and the Bruins had trouble after that clearing pucks that they should have got out of the zone, and it results in Tuck's game winner.
Well, I feel like the Boston Bruins were a tired hockey team from halfway in the game because the Sabres were on top of them and were dumping pucks in and making them have to come out all the way up the ice as opposed to getting half the ice and counterattack. And there was some physicality. It wasn't crazy physical, but there was some physicality and some hits that they wear the team down. So that's a perfect example. Remember Paul Maurice a few years back, and he was telling everybody on the bench, you hit them because by the time they get to game seven, they'll be tired. Mm-hmm. I feel like the game plan for the Sabres in game three was to be able to have the physical element of the forecheck so they would get tired late in the game. And that shift alone showed how Boston was tired. They couldn't get the puck out. Yeah. They couldn't handle it clean. They couldn't make plays. And then Thompson's screen in front of the net was huge. Now, the Sabres only had five screenshots in the game, which there's a really significant screen. Mm-hmm. It's not how many sometimes, it's the quality of the screen. And the quality of that screen and that shot was perfect by Tuck and Thompson.
Eastern Conference odds after Buffalo wins last night. They're 10-3 all time, by the way, in franchise history in series that they do take a 2-1 lead. And this is how the East looks after Ottawa lost again on home ice to Carolina last night. So the Canes have a 3-0 series lead. They're a +135. Tampa, Buffalo, Philadelphia, and Montreal in that order as far as Stanley Cup odds. And this is probably pretty consistent with what we've been seeing. Colorado, they're on the cusp now of clinching as well with a 3-0 series lead. Buffalo at +1,500. You like it?
No, I still think that's too low for me. Like, I think but I guess the roadmap to the Stanley Cup, having to, you know, win a tough matchup, Boston, maybe Toronto, Tampa, Montreal, then Carolina. Like, there's a lot in the way, obviously, compared to, you know, maybe Vegas, who is in the pillow fight division.
So, Sabres not practicing today. Obviously, they'll get back at it tomorrow, and then the game comes up, game four, in Boston on Sunday. So, after that, and who knows if they can, you know, kind of replicate, I think it'll be a completely different game. Boston's frustrated that they weren't more physical in game three, but game four comes about on Sunday afternoon, and then game five back here in Buffalo on Tuesday for a 7:30 start. So that's your look ahead as far as the schedule is concerned. 2 p.m. on Sunday, 7:30 on Tuesday, and Buffalo would love to be in a position to be talking about next steps after that game five, but a huge one still to come on Sunday afternoon.
So it's interesting today, obviously, a day off for the Sabres, but Lindy Ruff did talk to the media. He made a comment, remember the Peyton Krebs penalty, where Krebs kind of just went with the back of his hand, and he was the only one taken out, and it was a power play for Boston. And at the time, like, the bench was frustrated. Lindy was yelling at the referees, and Lindy Ruff today saying, we were warned by the league that anything after the whistle was going to be a penalty, so we were okay with Krebs' call. We warned the players. We shouldn't know. I think that's Lindy Ruff laying the ground for game four again, because in game one and game two, Boston went after Thompson, Dahlin, Tuck, Quinn, McLeod, Norris, everybody after the whistle. It's not a game that the Sabres are going to win against the Boston Bruins. And now this is Lindy Ruff saying, okay, we're fine, we're fine. In the moment, he was mad at the Krebs penalty, but now he's saying, we were warned, that's fine, because he wants those scrums to be less and less of a factor in games. And we'll see if that is less of a factor even more in game four from what it was in game three.
Lindy said today Norris is feeling better. We'll see how it goes between now and Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. If Josh Norris was ready to go, who would he replace, in your opinion?
That is a tough question. I think if Norris is ready to go, you're probably going to put him back in a spot in the middle with Doan, and then slide Auslan over to the wing, which bumps Benson out of that spot. I could see Benson playing with Greenway and Malenstein. And I don't know who would play center. Maybe Greenway is the de facto center on that line. I think Kozak would come out. And maybe you put Krebs in the middle with Greenway and Malenstein, and you put Benson with Thompson and Tuck. Mm-hmm. I just feel like Benson has more of that fourth line dog in him that hounds pucks and can play with Greenway and Malenstein. But I think if Norris was to come back, he would go back in the middle, and Auslan would move to the wing. Auslan had a great game, but Auslan also played most of his time in Buffalo with Norris and Doan, and Auslan was on the wing. He had a good game in the middle, but he can still go to the wing.
Across the league, we mentioned teams on the verge of sweeping, obviously Carolina and Colorado after last night. Philadelphia is in the driver's seat, 3-0 on Pittsburgh. And tonight we're going to see Tampa and Montreal, Vegas and Utah, Edmonton and Anaheim. These are series that are all at 1-1 entering the action tonight. And when you marry that look ahead with what happened last night, man, it's tough to be in Ottawa right now based on what happened, has happened, continued to happen with their defense corps and injuries down the stretch. How they made the playoffs was remarkable with the number of guys missing. And then last night, this from Taylor Hall on Jake Sanderson. I don't understand how it's not supplemental discipline, how it wasn't a major in the game. I hated it.
I hated it as well. And look, I don't think Taylor Hall's a dirty player, and trying to come in and target Jake Sanderson in the way that he did. But Jake Sanderson left the game right there with a hit to the head. And, I mean, the rule book says, when at Rule 48, when it comes to head contact, is if the head was avoidable, right? Like, if, and this to me, Taylor Hall giving that hit to Jake Sanderson, the head was clearly avoidable. Like, he could have gone full body. It wasn't like Sanderson reached forward, last minute pulled back, it got bumped. No, the head was in the same place, and Hall picked the head. I would have given a 5 minute and a game on the play. I would even look at it from the player safety side as to what to do with Taylor Hall moving forward. Would it have mattered at the end because Ottawa's power play was terrible? I'm not sure, but it mattered because Jake Sanderson's a big part of their power play and wasn't there for the rest of the game.
Kings won, well, Canes won, obviously, in Ottawa. Kings fell on home ice last night 4-2. Quick overview before we get to Dazzled and Disturbed of the Avalanche and their impression. They left on the Kings once again. Landeskog, Makar, Lekkonen, who never ceases to amaze in the postseason. Yeah, and Brock Nelson scoring the goals.
Well, it was a weird start for LA because Gabe Landeskog shot it from the point. It went off the end wall and hit Forsberg's skate going in. That was one of the lucky bounces. But, you know, LA came back right away, though. Colorado established their lead. They made it 2-1 right away. They took a 3-1 lead. They were in control. It wasn't like game one, game two. I felt like that was more Colorado's dominance in game three.
I think LA and Ottawa have some familiar feels right now based on just how it can often seem like things are stacked against you. Time for D&D.
Dazzled and
Disturbed.
Adrian Kempe is the poster boy for this. Whiff on the power play, transition the other way, shorthanded attempt for the Avs on the rush, and off of Kempe's skate and in. This was the game changer. Could have been 2-2 in the third period. Instead, it's 3-1. It was lights out for the Kings.
It was lights out, and I felt bad for Anton Forsberg, the goaltender, who's trying to come across on the 2-on-1, and it goes off Kempe's skate and beats him 5-0. But again, Artturi Lekkonen, he always finds himself in these type of situations, game-winning goals, shorthanded goals. Kempe goes for the one-timer. It's not a broken stick, it's just a fan on it. Like, I forward at the blue line often are looking to make sure their shot's not going to get blocked. They don't have that same instinct as a defenseman, and defending is hard too. I thought he did really well to force the pass to go 5-0 on him, but the skate just got too much of it.
Power play, Ottawa 5-on-3. Disturbing?
Very disturbing by the Ottawa Senators, who had a minute and a half of 5-on-3. Down 1-0 in the second period. And obviously, you know, no Jake Sanderson, so it makes a difference. But they barely got 10 seconds of zone time. They couldn't get it in the zone. They made turnovers. This play by Brady Tkachuk to get it back across just cleared the zone. They were just awful. The Boobers were out in Ottawa for that 5-on-3. It made life easy on Freddie Anderson and the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah.
It was potentially one of the worst 5-on-3 that I've ever seen for a minute and a half.
Okay, well, the Sabres have had a tough year 5-on-3, so let's be real on that.
That was potentially the worst.
Okay, you have a new favorite thing to follow quickly on social?
Face-offs? Oh, face-offs, yes. So there is a Twitter account that is called Face-offs Matter.
I understand why this is not natural for you to be talking with excitement.
And he grabbed a snapshot of the face-offs in the Sabres-Bruins game. Sabres were 51% to 49%, and he says, hey, excuse-moi, meaning excuse me, face-offs do matter because the Sabres won and they were 51%.
Tammy Clooney is tagged in this. Is she a face-off expert?
I don't know if she is, but they did
Are you a face-off expert?
No, I'm not a face-off expert. Face-offs only matters when they matter. But that was funny. Excuse-moi, big dub. Somebody went out of their way to create a handle that's called Face-Offs Matter.
Please go out of your way to get in right now. Like, you don't have to wait until game 5. Sabres.com/50/50. Marty, you know this. The jackpot is going to be huge, presented by Northtown Automotive again. It's guaranteed to be $150,000. It has been almost $400,000 in each of the last two. So please,
yes,
do your part. Think of it as, like, you know, community service. You're helping the community. Sabres.com/50/50. Shayna's next.
Hey guys, it's Daxton.
And Hayden from Blondies Out Loud.
And if you've ever thought about starting a podcast or making money from one,
we use Creator Lab from Odyssey for our show, and it's honestly been so easy.
It's free hosting, and it gives you a really simple way to earn on top of whatever you're already doing.
Which, of course, we love because it just adds another stream without the extra work.
So, if you're a creator or podcast curious,
check it out at creators.odyssey.com.
Our number two rolls along here on a Friday.
Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, which is, of course, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. 803-0550. If you want to jump on, give your thoughts. We're talking a lot of draft in hour number one. Sal Capaccio, we touched base with as well. We'll be having draft coverage now for the next 2 days right here on WGR, starting at 7 o'clock tonight and then noon tomorrow, though. Joe Cali will be riding solo from 11 to noon. So a little bit of a pre-draft / Sabres coverage as well.
Good. Maybe
Not only solo, but riding dirty, if anyone asks.
I'm not going to ask. But maybe Joe can have the next freak-out moment on a Sports Talk Saturday hour version.
No, it'll be fine. It'll be good.
I'll still never forget.
What would I freak out about? I mean, honestly, if the Bills trade back like 5 more times, I might freak out. Like, if we're getting towards round 6 and we have every pick, that's going to be a problem. That's where I'm going to have an issue.
Maybe you'll get a caller that goes ahead and says nothing matters, even the Sabres being up 2-1 because they didn't make a first-round pick. I don't know. And
I would love that person. I want to talk to that person.
I will still never forget Sal.
I think that actually would prompt a freak out on my end.
I want to talk to that person.
I think I'd be
bad.
Able to stomach anything like that.
Yeah.
So.
Nothing matters.
I will still never forget Sal asking me, are you okay? After the Xavier Worthy trade and everything like that, and I lost my marbles about it. And the answer was no. I was drinking lemonade out of a gallon that day.
Oh, yeah.
I was not okay. My mentals were in shambles.
You're a big gallon guy.
That is true. You've been doing that recently.
Out of the gallon.
Nah, you got like the big iced tea like gallons that you usually put in your fridge for the family.
I've seen you down an entire one of those in one sitting. I don't know what you're talking
but
about.
But I poured it in a glass like a classy person.
That doesn't change the fact that you're still like a big, I'm going to have a gallon of whatever I'm going to have and just have it to my side. I'll just also have a glass.
I'm sorry I like efficiency with
I'm not judging. It's just, I think it should be acknowledged.
If I'm spending $3 on beverages, I might as well get a gallon of them.
No, that's
Thank you, Arizona.
I think it's totally fair.
You should sponsor us.
To the Sabres, though. And that was a really, really impressive game by them. I think specifically what the situation was. We've talked about it a lot leading into last night. Boston took game 2. And ultimately, that allowed Boston to come away with what they wanted to do in Buffalo. If they won both games, they'd have been thrilled. They'd have been through the moon. What they really wanted to do, though, was take one of the games on the road and, quote unquote, make it a series, right?
Right.
The old saying is a series doesn't start until the road team wins.
And now two road teams have won, as a matter of fact.
Right. But it does put Buffalo now, I think, in the more advantageous position. Two of the three games, I think they have looked like the better team. The second game is much more, I think, goaltending issues and just the team kind of being flat for two of the three periods. The power play is still a problem, no doubt. But it does set up Sunday to be a really, really strong moment for the Sabres. Boston, I think, is reeling. I think it has been Swayman that has kept them in these games. And the first line, David Pastrnak is as good as advertised. We all knew that coming into the series. But also, we don't actually know the health of Josh Norris.
Right.
It's not that Noah Austin would have to be moved off or they have to have a hard conversation. I think the hard conversation is just, okay, where are we putting everyone? You brought up the idea, like, do you move Benson down to the fourth line to keep Krebs up top? Because that is working. But I think ultimately, you're still going to have Noah Austin in the lineup, just it would be with Josh Norris. Maybe Tyson Kozak is the guy that's out of the lineup, which, you know, no offense to Kozak, but I don't think anyone's going to, you know, light up torches because of that.
It now becomes a question of, okay, do you want Josh Norris in the lineup or Tyson Kozak in the lineup? And it'd be a weird preference if a lot of people are saying the latter.
I guess that would be a very weird conversation to have, it because it should be Norris, but through the two games he's played, it hasn't been great for him.
It hasn't been great for him, no, but it is still a – it's still only also two games. You can rebound no matter what, and that's the beauty of hockey, is that even when you're having a gross game, it could take one shift to help cement a little bit of stability. Tage Thompson has been relatively quiet outside of an 8-minute stretch in game one. He has even made some baffling plays, but he wins them game one.
He does win him game one. I don't want to be negative, but he had a stretch there last night where they're in a 2-on-1 situation. He just, they're into the offensive zone. And he just stops.
He stops on the outside instead of driving
in. And or just passing the puck. I mean, that would have been a tougher pass.
But create the threat, though.
Do something.
Attack it. That's the thing. He stops on the outside.
And he just gets barreled into, loses the puck, and then like a minute or two later just takes a very lazy tripping penalty, which this is in the third period where they're grinding out this win or trying to.
Right.
He really frustrated me last night, which that tends to be Thompson. He is not a night-in, night-out player, typically, in terms of his impact for the Sabres. He'll have those moments, game one. You'll also, of course, have a few games where it kind of disappears a little bit, or you're sort of waiting for your one C to come out a little bit.
You're waiting for that one shift for it to turn around.
Yeah.
And that, like you said, it happens from time to time. There are games where he's absolutely dominant, too. But, yeah, on the score sheet, it is just the 8 minutes of game one. He has had some good plays. He has had some pretty good chances as well. Sometimes when you're shooting as hard as he is, you're going to miss the net because you're trying to be fine with it. And a speedy, quick shot, it's going to be harder to be exactly precise with it. But yeah, there is a little bit of inconsistency in his game as well. But the top line, through three games, is doing its part.
I think
Tuck has 4 points. Krebs has three. Thompson has three. And while it all came in one moment, you're up 2-1 in large part thanks to that.
I think, though, specifically, two of their better players through the three games have been the guys that, funny enough, do have the experience. I was up and down about how much the players' experience would matter, that maybe it's more coaching that is going to get the most out of them. But instead, it has, I think, been a healthy mix because Bo Byram, I think, has been their best defenseman, and Alex Tuck has been their most consistent forward. Maybe not necessarily their best. I mean, again, because the 8-minute stretch from Thompson in game one was electric. And then Noah Austin last night was legendary playoff debut in Sabres history. But I think Tuck has probably been their most consistent, and they need that from him. We've been waiting kind of all year a little bit for Tuck, by the way, is to kind of show like the guy that's going to get paid the big bucks. I'm not going to lie, to end the year, it's looking more and more like you need to figure that out. You
probably
need to get
him paid. Do that. And on the other side of it, like Byram, and again, these are two players that made cup finals. Byram, of course, winning one with Colorado, but Tuck plays in a cup final with Vegas. But Byram, in particular, there is really some trust going on now. He has the second most time on ice on the Sabres through three games. He's averaging 22-15. Only Dahlin outpaces him. It is becoming, no, we are trusting what this guy is doing. He is scoring goals. Even in game two, where it seems like all hope is indeed lost, it's 4-0. Who scores to get them kind of, who scores to get a little bit of sweat down the brow of Boston fans where the Sabres do score two goals? It's Byram. Byram has been their best defenseman. And if I can still even get more from Rasmus Dahlin, which I certainly should, it is the fact that I've got a second pair defenseman who is now skating top pair minutes because he's earning it. He's showing up in the moment, and he very much is playing like, I've been here before. I know how this works. And it helps out Owen Power, a guy that is much maligned for his tenacity or, you know, the toughness factor of his game. You have a Bowen Byram there with him to, on the bench, kind of talk him through how playoff hockey is going to go, of like, ah, they're probably not going to call this or that and the other, so we can kind of get away with some of these things. Be the calming presence, even though Byram is still very young himself. The fact that he's been on a deep cup run, he's playing like that kind of experience is going to matter.
It really is working for them. I think they're also running into the situation, too, of you mentioned it in the first hour. They're not playing their best hockey, right? The power play has not been good. They are struggling at times to break through Boston's, I think, still very stout defense. These are grinded out games that you're sort of playing a war of attrition with each other. But with that, they still have the 2-1 lead. So it is allowing them to reap all the rewards and still be growing. It is funny, too. I mean, and this is, again, down the road. But they match up probably better with Montreal and Tampa. They probably match up better with those two teams. But we mentioned it, I think, yesterday leading into the game as well. Boston's probably going to teach you more, though, than those series. It is going to teach you how to get through a series where you're just grinding it out. Colorado is going through the same thing with the Kings. Just every game feels like they are just having to work harder and harder and harder as they go and maybe eke out a 2-1 win. Last night, they do actually have a multi-goal win, but they've been grinding it out as well. And for a young team, I think it is actually setting up the Sabres better in the long run. Again, we'll see if they actually get through this series. They're sitting pretty right now, but of course, this can change very, very quickly. But as we said, I think they're learning a lot together. You mentioned Byram and Tuck already having this experience, but they're playing against a team that maybe they don't match up great against, and they're still able to eke out these wins. They're still able to play at a high level. Two of these three games, they've been easily the better team for a majority of it. The first game, they just don't lead, but they're the better team for 90% of that contest.
We're talking about it off the air while the draft coverage is going on. At one moment in the third period, we say, and they're all over them again. They took the 2-1 lead, and the first thing that you said during one of the breaks was, and they're all over them again. Almost as if, like, bewilderedly, like that statement. It was a little bit of like a bewilderment of like, and now they're all over them again. Like,
well, because in part, at the time, it was just like, they can't score.
Right.
Like, that was a big part of it. It's just they're on them again and they're down or it's tied 1-1.
Yeah.
It's just like, come on.
But it's getting to a point where, yeah, no, they are the better team overall. It is a matter of you have to solve the issue of Boston clogging up the middle. And the way the Bruins have been staying in games is Boston does that, and Swayman's great for the rest of it. Beating him with a couple really nice plays from Oslin in particular on the Byram goal.
That pass by Oslin was so good. That pass was fantastic.
The TNT broadcast was great with this because the color commentator goes, he gets into the zone, and it doesn't really go the direction. Oh, never mind. That was Oslin with the pass, and that's a great play. Like, he looks at it again and goes, oh, that was intentional. Never mind. Forget everything that I was just about to say. This is actually an incredible play.
Yep. Yeah, that pass by Oslin. he should be sort of like the guy that we're remembering from that game. His playoff debut, he has the primary assist to get him tied 1-1, and then he has the empty net goal, which is to grind out to ultimately give him a 3-1 win.
A smart play, too, by the way. Like, he uses his body to wall off, I do believe it's McAvoy down there, in order to then get the shot past Pastrnak, but it's a very smart play. Again, two empty netters, two incredibly smart plays by the Sabres. Thompson has to make that play on the wall, and he does it perfectly. And he gets drilled by Zadorov, too. Knowing he's going to get smacked, makes the right play on the glass, to where Tuck's able to read, react, and sprint. This is the same thing. You react to the flip, and by Byron, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But Oslin then walls off the defender, said he can just beat a player to the empty net. And that's a lot easier to do because they don't have the padding.
Right. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go back to the phones. RJ is up next. RJ, how we doing?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
So, two things. With Tage Thompson, I don't understand. If you guys notice this, he gets kicked off of faceoffs a ton. I don't know what this man's doing to get kicked off of faceoffs all the time. But are you guys noticing that, or is this just me?
I haven't specifically noticed that. I more have the frustration he doesn't win a lot of them.
I have thoughts on faceoffs, but continue on your
yes.
point.
Well, it's just you're our center. I mean, how are you always getting kicked off of these? And it blew my mind because I've been watching the last few games. I'm like, man, this man gets just watch it for the next couple of games. Watch it how often he gets kicked off of the faceoff. He probably wins a lot too, but I just know he gets kicked off a lot. And the last thing I want to mention is, so we moved back in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think now is our number one thing now? Why did we move back? Who did we see that we don't think the two people above us in the second round are going to take that's going to be for us there at 35?
Oh, yeah. RJ, I think really it's less of who's just not going to be there. It's who is going to be there. It's
right.
A lot of guys that were being mocked to the Bills at 26 or fun ideas at 26 are there. It's Caden McDonald. It's Denzel Boston. It's Emmanuel McNeil, Warren, Zion Young, Cassius Howell. If you want to go to the receivers as well, you've got a number of them there. They are in a very, very pretty spot. And I think that's why they felt comfortable doing it is once you had Cleveland and Chicago go ahead of them, and Chicago ultimately does take Dylan Thienemann, but Cleveland took Casey Concepcion. That was always an area, and Chris Passo brought this up earlier this week, that may kind of tell the Bills what they want to do. Now, again, this is all kind of a theory. We don't actually know what came first, the chicken or the egg in this situation.
I do want candid answers, and I know I will never get them, and life's not fair like that.
But if we're going to go based off the theory of they had players with first-round picks and they get taken right in front of them, I think it just became the teams around them ultimately weren't going to be taking players that they necessarily liked. You may have wanted Omar Cooper Jr. The Jets ultimately go get him. There's a good chance the Bills didn't really care for him.
They traded back two times while Omar Cooper Jr. was on the board. That tells me enough.
And let's look at the players that do go. So at 26, that's the first one, the Texans, they go guard. Miami goes cornerback. New England goes a tackle. Peter Woods out of Clemson, right? That may have been a player the Bills maybe would have wanted, but they go to the Chiefs.
So that's one.
That's one. Omar Cooper Jr., I think it kind of proves that while maybe Bills fans wanted him, the Bills did not. An edge, Kendrick Faulk, and a running back in Jadon Pierce.
So that's
two. Jadarian Pierce, excuse me.
Two. There's two players then.
Maybe.
Well, think about
that's
it. Like if it's,
maybe.
But if it's two of like my five,
mm-hmm.
that's a net win. And again, Cooper very clearly was not on the Bills' radar because they trade down twice with him on the board. If they wanted him, they would have taken him.
Yeah. And then on the Sabres point, I didn't mean to laugh necessarily, but I really haven't noticed how much Tage Thompson is moved off of the center circle. Off the faceoff circle. I've just more or less noticed he doesn't win a lot of them.
That's kind of where I was going with this, which is I'm perfectly fine with Tage getting booted from the faceoff circle because in three games in the playoffs, he is 26.9% on faceoffs. Kick him out.
Yeah, that's where it got to me was I'm actually more than okay if he's
yeah,
not there.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of okay with him not lining up there in the first place right now. But there's also something about – there's every now and then I'll watch any hockey game. It could be this one. It could be, you know, Carolina, Ottawa. It could be anything. It could be any Sabres game. It could be regular season. It could be – did you notice in the Olympics that players weren't getting kicked out of the faceoff circle that often?
See, maybe I got to watch this more. I don't ever like look for that.
Linesmen annoy the bejesus out of me. And this is the point I'm getting to. I could be watching a random NHL game. It could be game 14. It could be game 2 of a playoff round. And I blur out the words, drop the bleeping puck.
Well, yeah, that feels like everyone gets there pretty quickly.
Because the linesmen have a little bit of this, like, I don't know what it is. But then they don't drop it, and then somebody does something because they're expecting the puck to be dropped like a normal person.
And then they don't drop it, and then, oh, you go. What do you mean I go? You didn't drop the puck.
Mm-mm.
Like, it's something that annoys me to my core enough that I'm willing to talk about linesman etiquette in a face-off circle.
Yeah.
So thank you for bringing that that emotional scar that I have from watching hockey. It is a good point, but the problem with it is Tage's best game in the faceoff circle is game two when he goes 4-6.
Which, that's a good pop. I'll be honest.
That's 40%.
It's better than his average.
It's better than the rest of the playoffs for him.
Yeah.
Last night he goes 0-4. Kick him out.
As a team, though, they actually did win the faceoff percentage. I'm just saying, I know.
Ready? Tage only took four of them. That's not an accident anymore. Nothing against Tage, the player overall. Him in the faceoff circle? That's why Lindy doesn't want him at center.
That might be one of the reasons. That might be one of the main reasons.
Yes, because then your top line is chasing the puck right away.
Well, and we've talked about that with the power play. Like, I've brought this up a lot, is when they lose these faceoffs routinely, it turns in a two-minute power play into, like, a minute 40.
Right off the rip.
And then they're having to set up. And the zone entries are, at times, a real, real concern. For a while, last night, they stopped with the drop passes.
Yes.
And they were doing kind of what all of us wanted. And you noticed, also, the early power plays had some danger chances. They looked much better.
The power play was, and this is funny, remember how we bargained about this on the nightcap a couple days ago? Dormammu, I came to bargain.
Yep.
I just want the power play to not lose momentum for them. I don't care if they score anymore. I just want them to be attacking for 2 minutes.
Yeah. I just want constant pressure, or at least it feels like constant pressure for 2 minutes.
That's where I've gotten to with the man advantage, is I just want them to be able to attack for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Make Boston a little uncomfortable.
It doesn't feel healthy.
It's not healthy that I'm getting to, I don't care if you score or not anymore. I just want you to look good doing it. Look cool doing it.
I think with the power play,
and
too.
And that's awful that I'm getting to that point.
But I think this with the power play, too, and this is not a negative. It's more indicative of where the series is, that ultimately, if they could just be an okay unit, not riding this whatever it is, 0-36 streak, or again, whatever it is, how many times have they been actually probably then been able to take a lead in this series, start the game off 1-0? Because we're still kind of waiting on that, ultimately, Derek, is that we get to see how Boston reacts to chasing a lot of the early bits of the game, where instead we've kind of had to wait for the Sabres to get on the board. They have not been able to jump on early and force Boston to play their game. I think that's been the big issue with the power play ultimately, is almost even like a lack of scoring, but just more, or not a lack of danger chances, but just if they could score, it puts all of the pressure on Boston, and I don't think they'll handle that well. You kind of saw it yesterday, 2-1, and Buffalo's able to just grind that game out. The third period, they're just grinding the game out. They also have some danger chances themselves. They have a few shorthanded as well. Even when the game is 1-1, it becomes that. I mean, because we've seen as well, when the games are 0-0, the Sabres come out flying. And Boston's just kind of trying to survive the first 5 to 6 minutes of the game, the opening, you know, rush. That's my biggest frustration ultimately with the power play, is that I think it is really hampered how they're able to play the rest of the game, because they're not able to take these early leads.
And it's just gotten to me, like, okay, I'm here to bargain.
My read on this was Sean McVay being like, I have to understand all parts of this. And if he's up there giddy being like, woohoo, we got the franchise quarterback, their actual franchise quarterback is like, you know what? Maybe I won't sign. Sean McVay loves Matthew Stafford. And I believe that part of him being out there like that was like, Stafford is watching, which I'm sure he is, and I need to make sure to walk the fine line of being happy for the pick, but not dancing on the grave of a quarterback who's not dead yet.
Ian Rappaport, sounds like Aaron Rodgers a little bit when the Packers drafted Jordan Love. Rodgers just would never have it, and seems like maybe his relationship with the Packers was done from that point forward, but he was there for another year at least, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll get back into the draft stuff. Earlier, talking about the Sabres and their win last night, game four, Sunday afternoon. Definitely Alex Lyon, ? I like that conversation. I don't think it is insane for it not to be Lyon, but I'd be really surprised if it were Luukkonen in the game. I just like talking it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought up the Carolina 06 season. A couple of callers to the station have mentioned that as an example of a team that's gone back and forth with goalies successfully. As we said earlier, I think they did it more out of desperation than, but the Sabres are not in a desperate situation here. Not, they weren't even in one yesterday.
No.
But, you know, that's true that they went back and forth in 06. So I have one of the box scores up from that series. You know, there were five former Sabres on that Oilers team?
Five.
They weren't all former Sabres at the time. I think three were. And two would play for the Sabres later.
Yeah. Well, I know Pekka was there.
Yes.
Is Sekera there by then? No, he's still, he's not even here yet. Is he?
No, maybe not.
He comes in later. Yeah, sorry. He definitely played there after playing here, but wrong era. I'm already out.
I think it is three that hadn't been to the Sabres yet, actually.
Okay.
And two, Pekka and Dwayne Rolison.
Right. Rolison, of course.
Rolison's their game one starter and gets injured late.
Yep.
Ty Conklin goes in. He would play for the Sabres, what, the next year?
Right.
And get scored on in the last minute. And he never sees any more action in the series. There's a third guy. I don't remember his name. There's a third guy that plays the rest of the series. Yeah. Wilson does not return.
Right. Oh, now I really want to think of the name of that guy. It's not that important right this second.
Also, Jaro Spacek signs in free agency from Edmonton.
Okay.
That offseason.
Right.
And Rafi Torres.
Rafi Torres.
Right. An important trade deadline acquisition.
Rafi Torres.
Maybe 2010, the Boston series?
Yes, yes.
You want the other goalie's name?
Yes.
Jussi Markkanen.
Oh, boy. I would not have. I remember the name, but that was not the name I was thinking it was going to be. Yeah, they were down bad. Still went to seven games, right? That series?
It did.
Man.
Not that I watched any of it. I was too hurt. I could not watch Carolina after their win against the Sabres. I couldn't. I think I still haven't.
I watched a good amount of it, but I know I missed one game late in the series because I remember being at a Tragically Hip show in Art Park while a game was on. It was like, yeah, whatever.
Whatever.
I'm okay not seeing game five of this Stanley Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
I think that lines up. Anyway, that's my memory. I hope it's right.
Utah and Vegas, that's tonight. Game three tonight in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, first ever playoff game in Utah. Only the second year of the franchise. They've done a really cool thing. They have invited fans, you know, regionally, who have become Utah fans that originally were Vegas fans, or even Vegas fans currently who want to just trade. They're giving you a Utah Mammoth player jersey in exchange for your Las Vegas Golden Knights jerseys, which is really a boss move, man. Like,
love
that
it.
Is really, really cool that they're doing that. I love it, too. I love everything about it. I don't know if everybody loved the Mammoth nickname. I liked the Utah Hockey Club from last year. But the Zamboni they've got that looks like a woolly mammoth is incredible. That's real, right? I saw people sitting in it. I could get got by AI here.
I don't know, actually.
I'm pretty sure it's a real thing. Really cool.
My level of commitment to the National Hockey League this year has not extended quite that far.
To the Utah Mammoth Zamboni?
No, yeah. It's not. But I'm open to looking in. I mean, I think tonight could be that night. It's Friday.
I'm excited about I'm just really happy to have Tampa and Montreal away from the Sabres.
Yes, I agree.
Because I have been dying to sit and really watch that. We got to do a little of that Sunday afternoon. At least it was afternoon where I was before the Sabres and Bruins played game one. But I only got so far, and then the Sabre game started, and that was the end of that. So I'm ready. I'm ready for just to get home tonight and put that on and just look at it. Game three in Montreal. I mean, that is going to be beautiful.
And, you know, speaking of Carolina before, I really never had an instinct last night to watch Carolina-Ottawa. I mean, the uniforms.
It looked horrible.
It looks horrible.
It looked horrible. What Carolina's wearing on the road now is really tough.
It's not worse, however, than Anaheim. I can't believe Anaheim's uniforms are real.
The all orange?
No, the road, the white with orange and orange.
Okay.
Orange helmet, orange pants.
Yeah.
I can't believe that actually that passed and got through R&D, and they wear that. Could you ever? I guess you have to.
If you're playing there, I guess you do. Yeah.
But, I mean, is Carolina-Ottawa? Game two was, I think I read, was amazing. Double overtime?
Yeah, oh yeah, it was really good. And there was all the weird, there was the penalty shot off of the overturned goal, and it was weird, but whatever. Yeah, it was good.
What was last night? What's Ottawa's problem? Carolina's too good?
It seems like it. They're also down bad now. I don't know how early in the game. I definitely didn't see it happen, but by the time I got back to it late, Sanderson had been knocked out with a headshot. And he's not coming back, at least not for game four. And they also lost, I think, his partner, Zub. So they're down, I think, their top 2D now.
And 3-0.
And you're right. And the hit, it's Taylor Hall that hits Sanderson, and it's shoulder right to chin. But I think we already learned today, no supplemental discipline on that. Not that it's going to help Ottawa anyway that much. I mean, you take Taylor Hall at lineup. I don't think it would make that big of a dent in Carolina. And the guys they're down. I don't know what happened to the other guy, but Sanderson is their, I mean, he's their number one D, and he got wrecked.
Punishment for Peter Schaefer.
Right.
20 years later.
Right, right.
Glenn is with us. Hello.
Good afternoon, guys. Mike, I tend to agree with you. I believe they should go back with UPL for game four. Reason being is you can see since December when they went on that run, regardless of what the one goaltender did the previous game, Lindy kept switching back and forth. And it just seemed to these goaltenders that extra break gave them a big boost in terms of their performance. So that's my opinion on it.
Well, that would be part of the argument that you know what you got during the season based on the rhythm that they were in. And not always was it every other day, but often it was. And this is 2 days in between anyway. And it just, I think it's close enough.
Mm-hmm.
I can't quite get myself to say I would do it, but I don't think it's a bad idea. And this is part of why that you would get back into, you'd hope to be able to get back into a rotation, which I would say was a strength of the Sabres during the season. Look how it went. I mean, look how they both did being on in that kind of role, a tandem. And so that works for me. I wouldn't be afraid to do it. It would really be interesting. The reactions would be, I mean, out there.
For sure.
If they went back to Lukanen after last night. But like you talked about a little bit earlier, I mean, the odds are not necessarily bad that they'll want to go back to Lukanen at some point eventually. If Lion isn't just great every game and they win every game, they would, you know, maybe do that. And ideally, it wouldn't be like more than a week or 2 weeks before you do that. So, I mean, every game is so important now, but I'm not like done with Lukanen just because he gave up two bad goals.
Me either. I said it all along leading up to game three when I was stumping for Lion to get the start last night, which ultimately he did. Like, I'm not done. I think if you're talking about another 6 weeks of hockey here, absolutely both guys are going to have opportunity to play. I think either it would either be performance or even fatigue, emotional, physical, mental fatigue. I think one little piece that it's a subtle thing, but if you wanted to go all the way here with what they were doing in the regular season to increase the comfort level of each guy, they not only didn't play consecutive games, they didn't dress for consecutive games for a long time there. When all three guys were healthy, the guy that played, Lion or Lukanen, you know, played, and the other guy was in a suit, and Ellis backed up. And so I doubt you're going to get all the way there. Like, I don't think they would go. It seems apparent Ellis is clearly the third guy. We can argue all day about who's 1A, 1B, 1, 2, whatever, between Lukanen and Lion. They're clearly the two best guys. They're both dressing. You're not putting your third guy in the backup position because if something happened, you'd never forgive yourself. Not that he couldn't go in and play well, but if you've got him ranked, you got to have the top two guys dressed.
Pat is next. Pat, what do you think?
Hey, guys, I got to go with Lyon on this one just due to the fact that, you know, he's been known as the road goalie for the team majority of the year to begin with. And it seems like the guy couldn't lose on the road at majority of the time. And I think it's to the point now where we cracked that code, I think. I think the Sabres have figured out where this past game three was where they figured out how to beat Boston in every aspect of the game. And I think Lyon is your answer, but you don't want to get in a shootout or a battle with these guys, making it 6-7 or 7-8 or whatever, like a Tampa game, and having UPL in net. I think Lyon gave up that one goal, locked in, and now I think it's smooth sailing from here. And don't forget, it's the playoffs. It seems like every year it's one goalie. It's all it takes to get locked in to ride the wave, and he might be the answer.
I think, well, he might be. I think that would tend to be the case more often when you have a goalie that has been great all season or a clear number one, and that's not what – the goalies have been really good this year. I'm not saying they haven't. But this is not a team with an established guy, so it would be an outlier in, you know, the last 20 years if the Sabres went deep using two. I don't think they're going to, and I think if I put a poll up who would start game four, 95% at least – would vote Lyon. Is that too high? I mean,
no.
Who wouldn't? I mean, all I'm saying is, I think it's worth talking about. You liked the point about the long game when you advocated for Lyon mm-hmm. in game three, and that's a lot of where my head is. I thought it was a great, you know, analysis. You talked me into it. And I think there is still that.
Yeah, the same logic does hold here, I have to admit, because what I was looking to avoid by going to Lyon when they did for game three was having it be like a panicky, you got a gun to your head, you know, we're really down bad. And you avoid that by being proactive about it. The same logic holds here. If you want to really establish that you're going to play either guy and they're truly equals, then you do it. The question is whether you'd be able to get all the way there because you've spent your entire life since you were 17 or 18 years old being around this sport. I'm talking about Lindy Ruff now. And like, I just won a game 3-1 with this guy, made some really huge saves and helped us crush two late power plays against us. And I'm going to do what now? I'm going to put the other guy in? No, I can't do that. So I just, it's like even Lindy Ruff maybe is like, got like warring bits of him. Like, cause there's reason why you'd want the flexibility as the coach to be able to truly just treat the guys as equals so the team isn't bothered in the least when you do make a switch. But I think it's hard to overcome the, he played so good.
No,
just,
I know.
You just can't.
And it's 2 days off.
You just can't get past it.
You know, think about it this way, too. If it was about the rotation, Lyon is back from injury, could have started game two. Okay, well, nobody would have done that.
Right.
And what happened in game two? Did anybody call the post-game show after game two to say Lyon should have started? Maybe. We weren't talking about that before game two.
Right.
But, you know, Lukanen cracked in that game. Wasn't, you know, you didn't have to have predicted that. But that's kind of, I don't know. It's not, I can't say it's cause and effect that he did that because he had just played mm-hmm. the last game. I mean, I can't go that far. But you got here with both guys. I wouldn't want to, you know, block out that going forward. Paul Hamilton coming up at 5. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.